Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. And welcome to our show in episode 492, as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her ghost fat. What? What is this? Oh, you're going to love this show because it's just so cutting edge. Before we begin, please know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. They've got a special gift just for women. The new award-winning Her Life Stages products, which provide support for all the way from the menstrual years, including PMS, through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause in an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store, go to Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or check it out at solaray.com. And if you go to the website, use HER20 as a promo code. You'll get 20% off your purchase. All right. Now, here's your first reminder to click on iTunes after the episode to rate and review today's show, because we of the Her Podcast team love to hear your feedback. Okay. It's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life.
It's all about her.
Oh boy. Now, this is actually an incredibly cool topic that I've written about in my books and blogs, not using the actual term ghost fat, but really beginning to address what happens after people drop a lot of weight. And they almost don't even recognize they've done that. It's like a really fascinating thing. And I was very intrigued when I read a Medscape blog that really addressed this whole issue of ghost fat, as they put it, looking at the whole issue of, well, you know, I dropped 100 pounds, but I don't know. I don't feel like it's gone, but I look in the mirror. I'm not sure what I see. It's also confusing. And I read some beautiful quotes from Dr. Sheethal Reddy. And she is a psychologist at the Emory Bariatric Center, Emory University Hospital in Atlanta. And I was so intrigued by what she said and her wonderful background that I'm bringing her on board. Sheethal, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, this is so cool. So you received your PhD in clinical psychology from Kent State University after completing a behavioral medicine predoctoral internship at Duke University Medical Center. That is so cool. And you've been looking at young adult mental health, body image, and eating disorders. I'm curious, what got you into this field?
I feel like with most decisions in life, some of it is predetermined and some of it is just good luck. I've been doing this now for more than 10 years. I have always had an interest in sort of body image and kind of issues around that, but really, with some of the mentors that I had and some of the experiences I had in training, working with patients who were really struggling with their weight, you know, people who were really dealing with some severe obesity, and just became really fascinated in how, you know, even with all of the improvements in life that can happen with weight loss of that degree, I really just became interested in their overall quality of life. And so that really began this sort of interest in just how do we improve people's lives, not just with weight loss. So the weight loss is wonderful for some of these patients, but how do we make the rest of their lives feel meaningful and worthwhile after weight loss? So that's sort of how I came to this, to where I am now. And then, you know, just a lot of training and a lot of clinical work in the background there.
What are you doing right now with patients? Are these people who have had bariatric surgery? Are they people who are using the GLP-1 medications, all of the above?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mix. My primary interest is really just helping people through their weight loss journey. So, you know, I'd say probably half of those people are going through bariatric surgery. And now with the GLP-1s, I see a lot of people who are trying to lose weight without surgery. And so I would say that the defining feature of most of the people that I work with is they're doing this to prolong their life, right? So a lot of these patients have some severe medical issues or some chronic diseases along with just being overweight or obese. So it's a mix. It's a mix of people who've had surgery, who are on medication. Some people are on neither and just want to make some lifestyle changes. So whatever they need, I'm sort of there to support them with that.
You know, it's interesting. You said that a lot of them have medical issues. Do you think that that is a very large instigator for them to actually, you know, go through whatever, whether they use the new medications or bariatric surgery or whatever they do? Do you see that as a very significant trigger?
I do. I think motivation is different for each person. I used to, for many years, I worked with young adults and teenagers. And so their motivation was a little bit different than the patients I see now who are in middle age in their 50s or 60s. I think the common theme among all of them is wanting to live longer, wanting to enjoy life, wanting to be around with their grandkids. There are a lot of medical comorbidities that come with obesity, hypertension, diabetes, sleep apnea. And so a lot of patients are just sick and tired of taking all these medications. So they're looking for a solution that is long-term, that will give them more years on their life and make them more enjoyable. So it goes a little bit deeper than simply body image, although body image by no means is simple, but it can be pretty varied depending on the person.
What's the biggest challenge dealing with people on this journey? I mean, obviously, I've worked in this field for a very long time and I could raise my hand and go, I know. I'm going to shut the hell up. I'm going to ask you, as a psychologist, what do you see are the really tough mental challenges that occur when someone is really trying to do this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. There's so many challenges. I think the biggest one is we get in our own way. So we sort of have these standards for ourselves of what success looks like. And any deviation from that success is considered a failure. So we have sort of this all or none thinking about, you know, how the weight loss journey is supposed to look and where we're supposed to end up and what the outcome is supposed to be. And we sort of lose sight of all the wonderful benefits that are happening for us as we lose weight. And so I think a lot of the stumbling blocks simply revolve around not being able to appreciate all of the benefits and realizing it's a journey. There's no end point. You know, it's like life. There's really no end point to this. It's just a constant lifestyle change.
Yeah, I know. But what I've noticed, to your point, this is very complicated. And for every person, it's something. And they'll actually hold on to whatever the initial trigger motivation is for a while. And then things start getting a little funky. Then there's a holiday or there's a something that happens, a vacation or whatever. And I find that most people really struggle with regrouping and getting back at it again. What do you think?
I think consistency is the bane of all of us. One of the things we talk a lot about in our support groups and in individual therapy is, you know, what does consistency look like? As it gets closer to the holidays, at least in America, right, we have Thanksgiving and we've got Christmas and all these other holidays coming up. So we talk a lot about just treading water. You know, there's no need to set these really lofty goals when we know we're going to be pulled in all different directions around the holiday season. So we talk a lot about what can we maintain? What can we keep going? What do we need to hold off on? And so I think part of it is getting people to, exactly like you said, the vacations and the holidays, it's getting people to sort of look at this like, okay, I still have to do this, but maybe I don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to look exactly the same way it did 3 months ago. I can be flexible. I can change the way that I'm doing things to accommodate life, because life is going to happen no matter what. So consistency is a huge piece. And I think having those conversations with people in anticipation can be helpful. So it's not sort of just sneaking up on them. So that's another piece, planning. But these are all things that are part of life, right? These aren't anything specific to individuals trying to lose weight. This applies to everyone, regardless of your health status or weight status.
Absolutely. No question about it. So let's just spend a moment on this ghost fat issue. I just found this blog to be fascinating, and I have found it early on in my work. I actually called it fat head. You just walk around with a fat head, even though your body is, you know, maybe lean or leaner, however, you know. But I remember to this day that one of my patients once told me, well, you know, and she had just shed a little over 75 pounds. And so she was very much looking great. She was within, as it were, whatever kind of arbitrary normal range out there, you know, but she was definitely no longer obese and she was looking great and feeling fit and healthy, taking really good care of herself. So she was coming down, she was at a very famous mall and they had these escalators that have a mirror on the escalator and you could see yourself. I think it was like Saks Fifth Avenue, maybe up in New York or wherever. And she was coming down on the escalator and she felt like, you know, and she was just looking around like this, you know, and she felt like someone was staring at her. She thought, you know, you get that weird feeling sometimes. And she looked over at the mirror, the escalator on the other side, and she saw herself. And she did not know who that was. She felt like that individual was kind of staring at her. No, it was her. She was looking toward that direction. She did not recognize herself. She was like astounded, got off the escalator and thought about it for a minute and said, I don't know who I am. What do you have to say about that?
That's really powerful. You know, it's interesting. You said earlier, I think at the top of the show, how you had been reading and writing about this for a while now. But this term ghost fat, this phantom fat is something that kind of came up recently. I feel the same way. I've been reading and researching and working with these clients for more than a decade. I only heard about this term ghost fat, I have to admit, when probably in the last year or so. But I think it's a really nice term in the sense that it explains really well this disconnect people have after they lose a lot of weight. I mean, this goes even beyond weight loss, but I think weight loss is a really good example of this. You know, your client's experience is shared by a lot of people. This image that we have in our minds of what we look like, it is not what we see in the mirror. It's influenced by the messages we've received growing up, our experiences in our own bodies, society's preferences for certain bodies. So we use all of that to evaluate ourselves. And that's what we call our body image. It's that mental construct, right? And so that takes years to develop. And usually it starts very young. So by the time you're an adult, you know, your body image is pretty solidified. You're sort of used to being treated a certain way based on how much weight you have on you, how tall you are, your gender. So when someone loses a significant amount of weight, it takes a while for our cognitive makeup of our who we are to change. It doesn't happen overnight. It would be wonderful if it did. But it is one of the slower pieces that takes time to morph when we lose weight. So she's not alone. I have a lot of, you know, patients who will say, you know, they've lost 50, 60 pounds and they're able to get in the roller coaster rides with their kids. They're not on their hypertension medications anymore. They're not taking insulin anymore. But there's still this sadness or this disappointment that they still feel fat. And I use that word in how they describe it to me. They say they feel like they still have this weight on them. So it's sort of this ghost fat or this phantom fat that people are talking about. It just hasn't gone away. And so some of that, I guess, joy or the happiness that they were expecting from having a smaller body, it doesn't come. It doesn't come right away, at least. And so that can be really disappointing for people.
Well, you know, what I love to do, you know, when I'm writing and everything, I just make things up. I'm a complete subscriber to MSU, make stuff up. You know, I'm a clinical investigator and I publish quite a bit in the routine peer-reviewed journals and back and forth. But, you know, when I'm writing for, you know, the public, sometimes I just take, you know, certain liberties. So I'm going to run something by you that you probably laugh at, but here we go.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I've actually written this in, well, my last book was about the new science of food and addiction, you know, the Yale food addiction scale and all the wonderful work that my colleagues have done. This is what I discovered. If someone drops 25 pounds, okay, this is like a little plus or minus kind of, you know, like mean of the curve and whatever. But if someone drops 25 pounds, it takes 1 to 2 years for the brain to catch up. This is my observation. This is what I call Peake's rule. So this is my MSU part of this. Okay, make stuff up. So my rule is 1 to 2. Now, when it comes to 50 pounds, then it will take 2 to 5 years for your brain to pick up. Because if you think about it, you know, as a fellow woman, a dress size is like 10 to 12 pounds-ish if you're an average size woman, you know, like a difference. So if I drop like 12 pounds, you know, I'm in a new dress size. So if you think 50 pounds, like rut-row, you know, you got a few dress sizes in there and that's a substantial change. With 25 pounds, it's a couple dress sizes, right? And so I say the dress size thing because that's what makes you look different. Suddenly there's a waist that appears like, oh my gosh, you know, I always laugh. One of my patients, I think I said this in my first book, when I said, so what's your size? Because I'm all about body composition, the quality of the body, body distribution, all this stuff. So I said, so what is your dress size? And she thought about it for a minute, first time I'd ever met her. And she was probably a good solid 100 pounds over. And she said, elastic. That was her size. And I'm like, you are forbidden to ever wear elastic in this room. You are going to go out there and buy something that is form-fitting, you know, like with a button or a zipper. So I don't care what size it is, but elastic makes you float. You know, you could be anything. You could just live in your sweats for the rest of your life. I said, no, because then there's no mind-body connection. You know, anybody could do that. I mean, heck, if someone put me in elastic all the time, I'd be in trouble because I have no way to monitor where I am. I'm a firm believer in that little belt and making certain you can zip things up and button them up. And again, I don't care where you start, if it's a 3X or if it's 18, what do I care? But you be careful about that elastic. So this is why when I'm sitting back and I'm looking at changes like this, when people drop 100 pounds, can you imagine the order of magnitude more of their psychological prodrome as they try to wrap their head around it? So I always tell them for 100 pounds or more, I said, it will take you a minimum of 5 years for your brain to, you know, catch up, because so many of these people, not everybody, but so many of these people have been heavy for many years. And all they know how to do is to feel bad about what they look like. So one of my patients said, when I wake up in the morning, you know, and I go to the mirror, I don't want to look in the mirror. Then she says, oh, I forgot. I dropped 100 pounds. And then she looks in the mirror and she's like, oh my gosh, who is that? How do you deal with people like that?
Oh, I mean, there is so much. It takes a lot of work. I really like the story you mentioned about the woman saying, my size is elastic. There's so many layers to that. Like you said, it's so protective. It's so painful to, you know, if you are someone in a larger body and clothes don't fit the way they should, or society say they should, it can be almost protective to just stay in clothing that doesn't fit or doesn't need to fit. It just expands, as you were saying, right? So part of the work that we have to do to help people with their body image, especially after weight loss, is just being comfortable with accepting where they are right now. And it's taking away the shame from these experiences of looking in the mirror or putting the belt on or trying to figure out what size you are. There's so much ingrained there. It has been like that for years for some people. And so the blows to the self-esteem and the demoralizing impact of getting in the fitting room and trying 5, 6, 7 different sizes that don't fit, we're starting from there. That's where we are starting the work, is getting people to a neutral place, to where they can understand, look, we're going to at least help you feel less shameful about this and feel less guilt and feel less judgment. So I don't know how long it takes, but I don't think you're that far off. I think it takes a long time to get used to that body. And it probably depends too on how you got to where you are at this point. So I'll see a lot of clients who maybe gained the weight after their third or fourth kid late in life, but they have memories of what it was like to be small, to be an athlete, to not have to worry about their weight or any health issues until much later in life. So for them, they're dealing with a body image that is probably a little bit more positive. They remember a time when they were healthier, in better shape. Now compare that to someone who maybe has been overweight their entire life, have been told by doctors, by peers, by parents that they need to lose weight, that their body is flawed in some way, who have been trying diets since their 20s. That's part of who they are when they come to see you. The fact that their body has changed doesn't change anything else. It doesn't change their mindset. It doesn't change their sense of self. It's only changing their physical appearance. So it takes time. And I think we may touch on this a little bit later, but some of the interventions for changing body image and trying to help people appreciate their bodies more are very tactile, like the things you were mentioning, getting people out of the elastic and just trying to find their size and trying to be comfortable in kind of where they are at that point. So when we do the work with patients in therapy, it is very experiential in that sense. It's taking pictures and measuring yourself, but in ways that are couched with non-judgment and being compassionate towards yourself. But it's a long road. You know, it's a long road. Weight loss itself can be a journey lifelong for some people, and the mental aspects of it can take a long time too to shift.
Oh, there's absolutely no question about it. I'm astounded sometimes by the complexity with this whole issue of body image, you know, per se, because so many people are also hearing the echoes of what happened to them at one point. I go back to something that, you know, you had said in the blog: appearance-related bullying and teasing during childhood and adolescence can reverberate into adulthood and persist throughout the lifespan. When we see these patients, this is you talking, and ask if they've ever been teased or bullied, not only do many say yes, but it takes them back to those moments, to that origin story, and they remember someone saying something mean, cruel, and hurtful. And this is a stigmatizing experience. How do you help them with that? Because, you know, that's a piece of who they are.
It is. And they're relating this to us 15, 20, sometimes 40 years later. And it is still incredibly painful. One of the things that I try to help patients see is try to look at this from the perspective you have now. If you got the opportunity to talk to yourself as a child or to be that mentor that you didn't have, what would you say to them at this point? How would you help them get through it? Because I think there's a level of compassion that we're very good. Most of us, I would say, are pretty good at showing compassion and empathy to other people. We like to give other people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe not all of us, but I'd say most of us are like that. But we're not like that with ourselves. We tend to be incredibly harsh and critical. And we ask ourselves, you know, why didn't I do better? Why didn't I make better choices? Why didn't I take care of myself the way I should have? And we forget all of the circumstances that were in place at that time, right? Maybe we didn't have that loving adult. Maybe we didn't have anyone sticking up for us at school. So I try to help people take sort of the bigger picture and say, what would you say to yourself now? You know, what would you say to that child? How would you help them heal? It's a really powerful experience. Usually, even just encouraging people to be more kind to themselves is enough to help them open up and to realize, I don't need to hang on to this anymore. I'm a different person now. what happened to me was beyond my circumstances, was beyond my control. So, you know, I think allowing people to have that space to talk about those things and to explore those things can be incredibly powerful. So, you know, if that is something that your listeners are struggling with, even after weight loss, finding a mental health professional who can support them through that, I think can be incredibly beneficial.
You're absolutely correct. Piling on that, I ask people definitely to go seek, you know, if they're really having a big problem with this. Some can kind of like deal with it. Others really struggle with it because maybe there was a lot going on at the time. But what you're really doing is redefining the narrative. You're redefining what happened. In your little innocent mind when you were a kid, you see it one way. But then stepping back as an adult, now more knowledgeable, hopefully wiser, more experienced, you can kind of say, you know, those were really strange times for the following reasons, and I don't have to drag that around with me anymore. I'm okay. I see myself now. I am worthy, and I deserve to have this optimal health that I have now and all the rest of it. But I also think of Vince Felitti's beautiful work as he put together the adverse childhood experiences quiz and all of the studies that have come out of that. And the deeper that experience of child abuse per se, and the abuse didn't have to be, you know, physical, emotional, abandonment, neglectful, you know, all the rest of it also plays a huge role. And it could be obviously a combination thereof. And that's really intense. And I think a lot of people who have a significant adverse childhood event score and really feel as though that hit them, I think those people for sure should seek out some help, because the risk of comorbidities, issues like obesity, issues like addiction, even suicide, et cetera, are so much higher in that group for the obvious reasons.
It's so true. The piece that I think you touched on just a few minutes ago was this idea of disconnect from the body. You know, we're talking about ghost fat and we're talking about this dissatisfaction with the body after weight loss, but that disconnect from the body is a big deal too. You know, a lot of people, like you were saying, like they have turned to food because of trauma or because of whether it's neglect, whether it's abuse, whether it's a form of protection to, you know, have people pay less attention to them if they're in a larger body. All of these things, I think a piece of that is also that people stop, they lose touch with their bodies. So if you ask them, you know, do you have hunger signals? They don't know. If you ask them, you know, how does the body feel when you exercise? They're not sure. There's a lack of awareness of what is happening inside the body. So part of this work is not just to help them adjust to being in a smaller body, but it's like, what does that actually mean? Does that mean you're safer? Does that mean you're less safer? Does it mean you're getting more attention or a different kind of attention from society? So there's all of these other layers to not just, you know, that you're in a smaller body, but how do you now interact with a culture that, for better or worse, we still judge people based on their first impression. And one of those impressions is their size and their shape.
What do you see, since this is the Her podcast and this is about her, you obviously see men and women?
I see men and women, but I would say probably 80 to 85% of my population that I work with is women.
I'm just curious, like, where are the guys? I don't know. There's some big guys out there. So come on.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, I've been doing this for so many years, and I did this with teens as well. And even with teens, the majority of the people that we would see were young teen girls. And I think it would be, on one level, yes, we could say that it's sort of society's preference for women to be smaller and women are more concerned about their appearance. I think there is some truth to that. And I think men tend to only come in for healthcare when they are having health issues. But at the same time, too, I think for women, we have so many, our bodies are complicated. They're a little bit more complicated than men's when you think about our endocrine systems, our hormones, childbearing, menopause, all of these things factor into our weight. And they can make the picture a lot more complicated. So, you know, I don't have any evidence as to why, but my feeling is that we tend to seek out help for a multitude of other reasons that maybe men don't. And so then we sort of, on top of this, I think, pressure to be a certain shape or being a certain size, we just encounter a lot more healthcare providers. If we're seeing an OBGYN, if we're seeing dermatologist, if we're seeing cardiologists, you know, whatever it is, I think women tend to use the healthcare system more. So that may be one of the reasons. But like I was saying, a lot of the women I see too are, you know, post-children, ready to get their lives back, ready to kind of turn that page and do something for themselves. That's a really common refrain I hear. They said, well, I've given so much of my time to my kids and my husband or my partner, and now it is time to focus on myself. And so that is one of the, I think, one of the driving factors for a lot of women.
When we're talking about this issue of helping these people, there's the O word, obesity. Do you find that you're using it differently now? I'll give you an example. Instead of what I've just seen, I think this is Obesity Week, and there's a bunch of other, you know, related meetings where this topic has come up. I think there was just a big stigma meeting that just took place. And, you know, instead of saying the obese woman, the obese man, now that we're recognizing that obesity is a chronic condition and it's a medical condition, that we're now going to be saying the woman with obesity. So very much like when we say the woman with hypertension, although, you know, the hypertensive woman, it certainly isn't awful. It's more like the person with whatever comorbidity is going on at the time. And we're kind of looking at it differently. And the reason why I asked about the guy thing is there was also some recent work done looking at people's perception of their own size. For instance, neither group, male or female, will call themselves obese. Men will say, I'm a big guy. Well, you're right. You are a big guy, but we have a name for it, you know. And so we got that going on. And I think that this is also why they diminish it a lot. They just say, well, I'm big, you know, and I guess when they become super big, you know, we're talking about BMIs of 40 plus, that suddenly we have issues with diabetes and all the rest of it. Now, all of a sudden, the O word is attached to it. With women, women will say, I'm heavy. And this was actually from the study. I'm heavy. They'll say, I'm bigger than I should be, but they won't call themselves obese. And so I think that this is interesting. I find it fascinating because this may also be, you know, changing the perception of people and the risk that they're at, you know, with the current size that they are. And, you know, I want to make sure, as my Her podcast people know so well, this is a judgment-free zone. When you come onto my podcast, it's judgment-free. So I'm not saying, you know, all this, you know my goal here. My goal is for everyone to be as fit and healthy as possible. And no matter where you start, just so long as you're on that journey, kudos to you. And to your point, Dr. Reddy, you said there is no destination. You're absolutely correct. This is a constant dynamic process. But it's just, I want people to understand that we love you and we don't want you to end up with all kinds of funky diseases because, you know, you're carrying too much, especially dangerous fat deep inside your belly, the visceral fat. And we want you to be able to be as healthy and as happy as possible. We do, we do, we do. So this is why it was so important to talk to you, Dr. Reddy, because, you know, you're a psychologist. And I always think and say and believe that the mind is the driver here. The body is going to follow along with whatever little strategy and plan you decide to create. But the mind is the driver here, which is why we have to be clear about how to get to the mind. Does that make sense to you?
It does, absolutely. I mean, I think to your point about the terminology, I always look at it like, to me, it's very simple. If the language that I'm using is creating distance between myself and the person I'm working with, then I'm not going to use that language. And I've had people come in that there is a movement at this point to reclaim some of these words. I've had people come in and say, you know, I prefer to just be called fat, or I'm thick, or I'm, and I will just, I tend to use whatever the patient feels comfortable with. Now, there is a lot of stigma in the healthcare field still about people who are obese and patients who are obese. So I think it's really important for us as healthcare providers to make sure that we are using really respectful terminology, because the last thing we want is for patients to feel that they're just their diagnosis.
It's just so terribly important, right, that you go exactly where the person is, that you listen to what's important to them, and you know for a fact that this is going to be, words are powerful, especially from medical care professionals like you and me. And so that's one of the reasons why we run into such problems.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons people don't come back for care. They find that they're offended, or they're insulted, or they're disrespected by their provider. And so, you know, if something as little as just saying, Ms. Johnson, who has obesity, just saying it that way is enough to make someone feel heard and to be seen as an individual and not their diagnosis, then I'm all for that. And the other piece is just being respectful with people, but also letting them know, like, the diagnosis is less important than what you want to get out of life. So whether or not you agree that, whether or not you like the term obesity, you know, the reason that we're concerned about the obesity is because it's keeping you from doing things you want to do in life. So you're not able to keep up with your grandkids. You're not, you know, you're worried about being there for your children's weddings. And these are the things that we hear every day, that people want to be around to live their lives and have a good quality of life. So I'll often, whether or not someone is offended they're being called obese, I mean, definitely not in my room. We don't really talk about it in that way. But, you know, we talk more about sort of, what do you want to get out of this? How can we make life better for you? And sometimes, you know, I do see patients who are severely obese, even after weight loss, they're still considered obese. But is their quality of life improved with surgery? Absolutely. Are they able to do things they couldn't do? Yes. Can they get off their medications? Yes. So I think the label is, to your point, I think it's important that people understand what we're talking about when we say obesity and this midsection fat and this visceral fat. And some of these things are important for patients to understand. But as healthcare providers, I think we have a duty to sort of frame that in the sense, like, our goal is still to provide you with a good quality of life, or help you get there. And so that's the bottom line for us.
That's absolutely the bottom line. When you said that you're trying to really reach people with the tactile interventions and new wordage and whatever, a while back, I had worked with Oprah Winfrey with her. She had an expert team, and I was one of the experts. In one of her magazine issues, I did a whole piece, what I invented, my clothes-o-meter. And the clothes-o-meter is that if the scale is making you crazy, which it usually does, why don't you just whip out the clothing? You pick out whether it's a dress, a jacket, a pair of slacks, whatever, that fits you right now. And then look at that size. And most women's closets look like a department store. They come in every size, you know, at least five sizes. If you've really been skating up and down the size chart with yo-yo dieting and the rest of it. And so what I do is I simply say, all right, now you take the next size down, sort of the loosest garment in the next size down, right? And we're going to use that as your next goal. And what you're going to do is you're going to put it on once a week, and you're going to keep doing that until it fits, which means you just said sayonara to your original size. And then you take that one and you start skedaddling down that size, wearing a variety of that, whatever that is. So if you started at a 3X, now you're going to go to a 2X, from a 2X, a 1X, from a 1X to an 8 or 20 or however this thing works. Everything's so different these days. People love that. You know why? The numbers are more gentle. So instead of saying 265 pounds, which is a little hard to swallow for a lot of people, now I'm simply saying 3X. It's a smaller number. It is psychologically more gentle. It's something you can handle. And you just go, you get to go into your closet and reacquaint yourself with clothes again. And there you go.
Yeah, I think clothing is a better marker than a scale. I call the scale your frenemy, and it's really not. I don't encourage people to get on the scale unless they're going to their doctor's office. There's so many other ways to tell how you're doing. I love clothing. I tell people to take pictures of themselves, even if you don't like taking selfies and you don't have to post it to social media, but having a visual to document your journey, you're going to see it more clearly than looking in the mirror or getting on the scale. So anything you can do to visually document this journey, I think is going to be more powerful than the numbers for sure.
I so absolutely agree with you. This has just been wonderful talking to you, Sheethal. It's just, as you know, we could end up talking about this for forever, maybe in a day. But as we're drawing to a close here, I just want to thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. Can you just toss out very quickly, just one little nugget that our Her podcast listeners can grab and think about today to be able to help improve themselves?
I think the biggest healing with any of this is just being able to look at yourself with compassion and kindness. And I know it sounds so simple and it sounds so silly in the face of some really big problems and issues people are going through, but you'd be surprised how much you criticize yourself if you stop and pay attention to it. So just take a moment every day to really sit and find something you can be kind to yourself about and accept without any judgment. So that's what I would say I think is something we could all do better.
I love it. And I can't thank you enough. Everyone, we have been talking to Dr. Sheethal Reddy. She is a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, and her work has been looking at mental health, body image, and eating disorders. And she's helped us understand what this whole phenomenon of ghost fat is, and then the experience of basically transitioning from an unhealthier weight to a healthier weight for optimal health and well-being. Dr. Reddy, thank you so much for being on the Herb podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
And everyone out there, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this terrific episode. I want to hear your feedback. And here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs. And don't forget the Her Life Stages products. Run on over to your local health food store, Whole Foods, Amazon, Sprouts, or Solaray.com to learn more about Her Life Stages. Ah, this has been another amazing Her podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peake, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Her podcast community. Pop on over to drpeake.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every week for another Her podcast where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Sheethal Reddy as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. So thanks so much. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Carpe diem. Have a great one.